Hi, I'm Danny Gusby, Executive Director of Fathers Resources International.
And I'm Heidi Nabert, President of the National Shared Parenting Association.
And
we're your dynamic
divorce duo.
Welcome
to the special Q&A session of Divorce Dad Weekly Expert Interview Series.
Today we have our special guest, Bruce Salen. And Danny, you've got a bit of an introduction here for those people who haven't listened to the interview yet.
That's right. Bruce became a first-time dad to a son 4 days after his 40th birthday, less than 9 months after getting married. His second son was born 3 years later. Bruce has had an exciting life in the entertainment business. He produced his first television movie at age 24 and was a vice president at ABC Television by the time he was 29. Over the next 25 years, he became an award-winning television executive, producing over 30 television movies, pilots, and series.
Bruce has also worked with actors, well-known actors, as famous as Ingrid Bergman, that's pretty stellar, Ron Howard, who is now a very well-known and well-accomplished director, Mickey Rourke, Don Johnson, Ben Affleck, Hal Holbrook, Barbara Hershey, Sissy Spacek, Henry Winkler, Alan Arkin, the list goes on to many, many more. Ultimately, left show business to become a full-time dad and at the same time to take care of his ailing parents, the classic sandwich situation. Sadly, shortly thereafter, his marriage ended. His wife abandoned their children, leaving the state, and in his late 40s, he became a full-time single dad.
Today, Bruce writes a column called A Dad's Point of View, which he started 4 years ago. With the internet, he has become a self-syndicating columnist that regularly contributes articles on many topics about parenting, raising boys, dating as a single parent, internet dating advice, marriage advice, blended families, and dealing with step-parenting, all the ups and downs of separation and divorce, as well as the general parenting perspective from a man's point of view.
His column is self-syndicated to 50 newspapers and blogs worldwide that feature articles about parenting and fatherhood. He's also a frequent guest on radio talk shows and webcasts like today's special edition of Divorce Dad Weekly.
Welcome to Divorce Dad Weekly's questions from our audience segment, Bruce.
Thank you very much.
Well, Heidi, why don't we just get right into
let's get right to the questions, Bruce. Are you ready to take on our listeners?
All right.
So the first question comes in from Dave in Tucson, and he writes, Bruce, I've checked out your website and have really enjoyed reading some of your articles. I wanted to know from your experience, how long should you wait after separating before you introduce the new woman to the kids?
Good question. That was, by the way, on my blog. That was the most commented blog of all the ones when I wrote about that specific issue. So it clearly touches a nerve and is one that both single dads and single parents, single moms struggle with. The therapist will give you an arbitrary number, like 6 months. Wait 6 months until you've been in a relationship 6 months. And I think it really depends on your children, number one, their maturity, their age, and the commitment you have to the person you may be dating. If it's frivolous, if it's play, if it's just dating for fun, your kids don't need to see that, in my opinion. If it's serious and if it's going somewhere, then when the time is right, you will know it. And I think that's pretty much what I believe.
You know, I think you bring up some really good points there. I know, Danny, you had an experience yourself when you were first dating. You didn't introduce the kids until well after a year, right?
Well, first of all, I didn't take off my ring for a year because I figured for better or for worse, and I figured it couldn't get any worse. But once 1 year was up, I took my ring off, and I started dating shortly after that. But I did not expose the kids to it whatsoever until I figured, you know, I met a few women that I thought were nice, normal, stable, and could be friends.
I think your date night was Thursday night, right? when the kids were at their mom's.
Initially.
Well, that's great.
My situation, by the way, was different, and it did present an interesting challenge, which doesn't come up in this discussion. I had my boys 24/7. So that meant I had to, if I dated someone for a long time, it meant sitters and it meant secrecy.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that was good either. So at some point I decided I would involve my boys and tell them, look, I am dating again. Your mom's gone. They knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I will want to introduce you to a woman I'm dating if I believe it's going somewhere. So it became a different situation. I think, to be clear on my answer from before, if you have a shared custody and it's 50-50, you just date when you don't have the kids. It's much
right.
easier.
Sure.
If you have them all the time, you are facing a more complicated situation.
Oh, yeah.
How did the boys react to when you did tell them? Obviously, your situation was much, much more challenging. When you broke it to them that you were starting to date, I mean, here's my analysis. Being an adult child of divorce, I went through this as a kid. The way I see it, as soon as my mom started dating, there was some finality to that. That was a message to me as a kid. I mean, I wouldn't be able to articulate it at that age. You know, it's 5 or 6 years old at the time, but it was a message to me that my father really was gone. You know, and that was final.
I think, again, it depends on the situation of the kids. My boys saw that their mother had left.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as – there was not an illusion that we would get back together.
Yeah.
So I think in a less contentious and a more normal divorce where both parents stay involved, you need to be more conscious of what dating will mean to your children. My kids had no illusions, even at their young age, that mom and dad were going to get back together.
Right.
So I wasn't shattering that. And I think girls have more of that than boys, as a rule, to be totally back to the differences between the men and women. I think little girls have more hopes that mom and dad will get back together than little boys.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, too. All right, let's move on. We've got a question in from Jim. He's in Vancouver. That's up here in Canada. He's asking, how do you sort out the discipline between you and your new wife? He says, my kids totally ignore their stepmom's attempts at discipline. My 14-year-old son just says, I don't have to listen to her. She's not my mom. My younger 8-year-old daughter likes to shop with my wife, but still refuses to do the chores that she requests. She only takes this seriously when it comes from me, their dad.
Okay, so Jim, you obviously have been living in my house, and I don't appreciate it that you've been sneaking around. That's such a good question. And by the way, my wife is from Vancouver, and her parents live in Vancouver, so we go there all the time. It's a sensational city, and I think Whistler is the best ski mountain practically in the world. The easiest answer to your question is that it is incumbent on the biological parent to support the step-parent. If you do not, especially if you disagree in front of the kids, you're just setting up the step-parent for a nonstop failure. So we've had exactly the same situations that he described. And what my wife and I try to do is discuss the proper discipline and the proper consequences separately and then present it to the kids together. And we have to stick to it. That you have to do whether you're a blended family or you're the original parents. If you vacillate on your rules or you give in on your discipline or give up on it, you lose. So like the example of my son has to have a B average to get his driving license. If I fold on that because he whines about it too much, I will never be able to enforce any discipline. You have to stick with the discipline, and you have to support your new partner.
I think that's really good advice, Danny.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I think back to when we first got back together. You had a lot of trepidation and concern about your role in terms of discipline, and I just said to you, "Listen, I picked you, I chose you, I trust you." And if you do something out of line, we'll deal with it in private. And we never ever had any kind of conversation in private where I came to you and said, well, how dare you or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I trusted you. I wouldn't have picked you in the first place if I thought that you were going to do something out of line.
Well, from my own personal experiences, again, being a kid that went through this this whole process of, you know, new potential father figures in my home. I was pretty mean sometimes to some of my stepdads, because I'm not going to say my mom was, you know, had new boyfriends every other week, but over the years, I was very young when my dad left, and so there were probably about three or four boyfriends over the years that lived with us for certain amounts of time, different years, and so on. And I was always resentful of these guys, and I did give them a bit of a hard time. So I've been one of those kids.
So you had a sensitivity to it.
Yeah, and I think as a result, when it came time for me to be a step parent, I really was sensitive to that, because I didn't feel I could replace you in any way. I mean, you were their biological parent. But at the same time, part of, I think, what really helped with you and I was that in many ways we were always on the same page when it came to things that we felt really strongly about, you know, in terms of whether a certain type of behavior was unacceptable or not. In that respect, I think our parenting styles were very similar, so the kids couldn't come running to me when you wouldn't give them the ice cream and I would. That just didn't work. And so what's really interesting about this, Bruce, is years later, I mean, the kids are in their 20s. Your son, actually, Danny, is almost 30.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What I find really fascinating about these two grown-up kids now is that they have a tremendous amount of respect for me, which I always find quite exhilarating. There is a way to do this and do it right. I think for me, I wanted to be more of a friend, but at the same time, if it came down to some sort of discipline issue, I would always defer to Danny and say, you know what, your father's going to say the following, so I'm on the same page with him, so do the following. And that's how I got around it. And it was just, you know, enforcing a type of discipline by default and saying, your father's going to ask you to do that, and so I'm here to make sure that you do that because that's what he wants.
And with that approach, I never, ever had to sit the kids down and say, now listen,
yeah.
You know, when I'm not here, you know, she's in charge. I never had to do that.
Well, basically, you're giving parenting 101 advice that you have to be united.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That applies to any parent group.
Yeah.
Step parents or not. If you show division, you're just giving the kids an opening.
That's right.
You sure are. And they find those openings and definitely use it.
Every time.
You want to learn good negotiation? Learn it from your kids, because they'll be, they can certainly push the buttons. All right, let's move on. We've got a question from Andre. He's in Montreal, the other side of the country. How can I start a support group like yours? I think it's a great idea and want to get a few guys to meet on a regular basis. If you were trying to set up a group together, how would you start today?
Well, I think the it's not easy, especially for men, because men tend to not want to go into this sort of thing as easily. Just like you'll hear how often men will resist couples counseling when the female wants them to, the wife or the partner.
Right.
So instinctually, it's harder. So I would say the easiest and the best source would be through your church or synagogue. There will be other men's groups, and you probably could do it. There will then be men that already have a certain sense of values that might be similar to yours. And it may be the best way to do it. To do it ad hoc, to do it casually, is really, really hard. So I would search in your area for any existing groups and potentially try to join them if they seemed right. And if not, I would try to work it through some kind of organization with church or synagogue at the top of the list. But there might be other organizations that would be a good source for it.
Yeah, that's good advice. We've got a question from Rob in Maple. Maple is a small community just north of Toronto. He says, I'm finding difficulty in communicating with my soon-to-be ex because she's selfish and cruel and upset with my 50-50 decision. Everything is a competition with her, and no contact has been the best scenario for me, But as our child gets older, he is only two now. How do I approach her, and how do I get her to listen to anything constructive I may want to apply?
Boy, my heart breaks for that situation, especially for the two-year-old, because he will suffer more than you will. Flippantly, I would say shoot her. That would be the best solution. Then you don't have the problem. Now, putting that aside, because that's obviously inappropriate, and I don't mean it, your goal is you just have to find a way. You have to get along with her for the sake of your child. So if you know what that means, and if you know the buttons that will get her upset and act that way, just don't push them, because your larger goal is to have a better shared parenting experience. And the more contentious your relationship with your ex remains, the more impossible that's going to be. So you have to put your ego aside, your pride aside, and recognize that your child's interest comes first, and you probably know what works and what doesn't work with your ex. And you just don't want to do it because you're angry, or because you're stubborn, or because you feel you got screwed somehow in the divorce. But that is irrelevant to your parenting options. So you just have to find a way.
Well, this goes back to something that I teach called waging peace, is that when you go into family court, everybody goes in there to wage war. And just picture the judges who are sitting up there all day long, and they're listening to every reason under the sun why people could be cruel to one another, and they never hear, well, you know what, I picked her.
And I take responsibility for that.
Boy.
And I take responsibility for 50% of what's happening here. But let's move on. We actually had a client recently that did that in court. He was representing himself and took responsibility for, you know, half of what was going wrong here. And the judge just about fell off the bench.
Judge said, after 17 years, I've never heard anybody ever say, I take responsibility. What can I do for you today, sir?
It was really quite...
By the way, I think that applies to every aspect of life. And it's something that is so... again, we went back, we talked about honor, and taking responsibility is a form of honor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to Matt from Chicago. He says, how did you handle all this emotional stuff? He says, your wife leaves, your parents are not well, and you're at home with your kids. Wasn't this emotionally draining? How did you cope?
Well, in all candor, I struggled. And at a point where I was getting very low and losing a lot of weight, I did seek professional help. And it did help me. And for a brief period, I was on some antidepressants because I had no appetite. I would take my kids to school, and I would sit at the kitchen table, and I would pour myself a bowl of cereal, and I would look at it, and I would have to force myself to eat it because I knew I needed food to stay alive. So when I hit that point, I sought help. So I am not Superman. I did not just survive this. But the only other thing that helped me a great deal was I always exercised. It was my natural drug. I don't drink, I don't do drugs, and I don't respond well to either. So taking care of myself physically was important. Getting help when I needed it was important. Having the men's support group that I had just joined in the previous year gave me someone to talk to. And then, of course, the kids needed me. So being needed did help me as well. Lastly, I had two dogs. And they were just, you know, that's the only unconditional love that really there is in the world is with animals. And I like to think they saved my life at times. When I'd be alone in the empty house, my wife was gone and the kids were at school and everybody else was working and I was between work at that time, the dogs were just a godsend.
Well, that's really interesting that the dogs had such a big impact on you, although I understand exactly what you're saying. They do give you unconditional love. You know, they talk about, it's a little bit of a segue here, but they talk about the elderly that often they end up in some form of depression. A lot of their friends and family have died, especially, you know, people that are living longer into, you know, their 80s, 90s, and longer than that. And they don't have any friends, they find it hard to make new friends. And they introduce dogs as part of, dogs or cats, as part of the process of, you know, basically helping them through that depression, and it works. It's very interesting. Very interesting.
Yes, I've heard of that, and I think it's wonderful. My parents outlived almost all of their friends, and it was just such a tragedy to see. And they were in a very large social circle for many years, and ironically, at their respective funerals, there were very few left. There were very few of their friends left to be there.
Right.
So there's a curse to living long, and that's outliving all those that you love and care for in some cases.
Sure. All right, let's move on. We've got Bob that's written in from Grand Rapids. He says, Bruce, you used to work in TV. Why are men always made to look like idiots?
Hmm.
I still see this today in sitcoms, but even more so in TV commercials. Since you used to be an insider, why are we all portrayed as idiots? Now that you are responsible for the house stuff, do you still have trouble figuring out how to use a paper towel?
Well, my wife would say yes.
I'm not even allowed in the kitchen.
I'm actually not a bad cook, but my wife's so much better that it's a non-issue.
Well, I'm a great cook. I'm just not allowed in the kitchen.
I don't have a good explanation why that is the case. There are a tremendous amount of female executives in television now, and a lot of female writers. So I think there's some of that coming out by the nature of the people that are making some of the decisions. I mean, heck, how long ago was the Movie Network out, and the head of the network was Faye Dunaway, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It comes, I think, to some degree from that. And it's also one of the groups that we're allowed to make fun of. Not the only group that we are really allowed to make fun of in our politically correct society are white males. So everyone else is verboten. You can't make fun of them. So that is also an odd explanation in our PC times.
So you are the scapegoat now as a white male in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
We can pick on you because there's nothing wrong.
Even more if you're a white Christian male.
Ah, okay.
You're really allowed to pick on Christians. In media, it's weird, and on college campuses, it's very, very weird and so wrong.
You know, there's a lot of fathers here that have bandied together on several occasions when there have been offensive ads that have been showing up in the subway system or in the buses or on billboards. And it's really interesting when they bandy together to say, you know, look, this isn't really a reflection of reality, or you're discriminating against me because I happen to be a woman, a man. Believe it or not, if they get enough phone calls to the agency or to the company that's sponsoring the ad, they actually bring them down. It's quite astounding.
Because business is immoral. It doesn't care. It only does what works and makes them money. So
right.
If they feel they're threatened, they will change it. So that's why certain campaigns and boycott campaigns work. Business in its essence has no morality or right or wrong. It just does whatever it can to make money.
Right.
So of course that's going to work.
Well, I'll chime in on this topic that Bob's brought up, because I always used to have I took issue with Married with Children, which was a sitcom that when I first met Danny, the kids used to watch this all the time, and I actually said to him, you know, this sitcom basically degrades men, and the guy was constantly being degraded, and I was actually hearing the kids say some of the things that the kids in that series were saying to their father, and they were starting to say these things to Danny.
Mm.
And I think you finally decided to not allow them to watch it eventually, right? Because
I pointed this out to you.
We
pointed it out to them, and I said, we got two choices here. You can either show me the respect that I deserve and separate between, you know, fact and fiction, or, you know, I guess we can't watch it anymore because you can't control yourselves. You tell me.
Yeah, so
well, I would offer another alternative, which I did for several years, which is really limit the amount of TV watching. Not only that, when we sold the house that we had to sell with the divorce and we moved into a house, the three of us, the boys and I and our dogs, I did not get TV for 3 years. We had TVs and we had DVD players. So that way I could control what they watched and the amount of time they watched it. So I would suggest to any parent that the amount of TV you allow your child to watch, it will have a direct effect on basically their intellect, their growth, their maturity, and their happiness.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting coming from two guys that used to work in television.
Well, I'm sitting there in a master control unit, you know, watching television 8 hours a day. You know what's really on the tube,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Not much.
There's a new challenge, though, and that is that a lot of this stuff is now available online through YouTube, and a lot of the television stations also have their programming on replays online. So that you almost have to sort of expand it beyond television now and also limit the amount of time kids are online.
Well, it's basically limit the time that kids are on any screen.
Yeah,
because there's so
exactly.
many screens that vie for their attention.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely
yeah.
right. Okay, we've just got two more questions, and we'll wrap this thing up with you, Bruce. Winston has written in from Long Island. And he writes, as a black man, I'm always feeling that I have to justify my role as a dad. My ex is always shaming me in front of my son, and there are times when I just don't want to pick up my son. How would you handle that?
Wow. What was his name again?
Winston.
Winston. Okay, Winston. First thing, never, never don't pick up your son. He desperately needs you. And I don't care what your wife says. He values the time with you, and it's important to him, and it's important to you. So that's my first point. As far as what to do about it, I would basically say you have to let it roll off your roll off you. You can't control how your ex-wife behaves. You can only control how you behave. And you need to be there as much as you can. That would be my primary advice, is just suck it up and be there for him and enjoy him, love him, show him how you don't overreact to that stuff. Show him how to be a man.
You know, I think you've got a very good point with that. And you know, one of the other things that I would think would be helpful here, Danny, would be that maybe the pickup and drop-off wouldn't necessarily be at his ex's house, that there be, you know, a neutral place where the exchange takes place. Either he picks up his son from school or daycare, or they meet in a coffee shop somewhere rather than in front of, you know, if it's in a public place, then her, you know, yelling and screaming at him may not be as possible, right?
Well,
that's great.
I often tell fathers who are in this kind of situation where it's conflictual for the child, is you should be doing your pickup and drop off at the school or at the daycare or something like that, and just limit the contact entirely. And if she's not agreeable to that, then I don't think that there's any family court judge, when you explain what's going on, is going to say, well, no, it's a bad idea to, you know, limit contact
between the exes.
Yeah, that's where your divorce expertise comes in, because you're completely right. You're completely right.
Okay, last question comes in from Miles from the Twin Cities. He says, do you miss going to work? He says, I've been out of work for 2 years and have become a house husband and a dad. I guess he means a full-time dad.
Mm-hmm.
He says, my wife works to support our family. I really miss getting out and working, but I love having all this time with the kids. I've turned into a really good cook, but there's still something missing for me.
Well, Miles, The answer is men, I think, need work more than women do. Again, a difference between men and women. I think women choose to work and often want to, but I think men are judged themselves many times by their work. So I did miss it for a while. And what I really missed, I think, more than anything else, was doing something that I felt was worthwhile, giving back to the world a little bit and feeling useful. So that's why I started going back to work. And I don't go to an office, but I wake up every morning and I can't wait to get to the computer. And between dealing with emailing and writing, I am working again, but I'm working on my own terms. And I'm working on my own hours, and I'm able to work it in and around everything else I want to do. That includes parenting, being a good husband, exercise, or travel, because I can take my work with me. So I don't miss the obligations of a formal job at all anymore. But I did miss the sense of contributing to the world that I used to feel I was doing in my television work, and I now feel I'm doing in my writing.
Well, I certainly understand what you're saying, Bruce. You know, I think when it comes to contributing, it's a big part of most people that have worked. That, you know, you see some end result. You can, and in a situation like the kind of work that you were doing, you know, at the end of a particular project, you've either got a series on television or a film that you can watch over and over again and see all the mistakes, right? I'm joking, but you've created something, and there's a real sense of accomplishment there, and there's goal setting and all that other stuff that goes along with it, right?
It's also leaving a legacy.
Sure.
One of the first movies I made after I left ABC, I shot up in Montreal, and it was called God Bless the Child, and it was the first television movie that dealt with the homeless situation. And it really brought a lot of awareness to the country. It was shown to the Senate, to the Congress, and so that sort of thing certainly made me feel really great. And now, on a much smaller level, when I get an email from someone who is impacted by my writing, I am feeling the same sense of accomplishment. So, I would suggest, Miles, while you're not working, there are things you can do in a charitable vein that will make you feel very good. There's any number of needs, I'm sure, in your community, and if you just do it a couple hours a week, you will feel so much better about yourself.
I absolutely agree with that. In my experience, that was one of the reasons why I got so heavily involved in scouting with the kids, because it was a way for me to feel like I was contributing something other than I mean, being a dad was really rewarding, but there was still the feeling that there was something still missing to the equation, and that I found in my journey that it was a gradual transition. It didn't just like happen overnight, and ultimately, I mean, it evolved and morphed into what it is that I do today with fathers from around the world.
Absolutely.
You know, Bruce, in closing, I'd like to just plant a seed here for you, and you know, with your background, I wonder whether your own experience of having gone through being a very successful, you know, show business guy, however you want to define that, to go from that to the scenario that you described of being, you know, a full-time dad dealing with a divorce and dealing with your ailing parents. I mean, let's face it, that's not an uncommon scenario except for the stay-at-home dad part. There are so many fathers and moms that are certainly dealing with ailing parents today, as the boomer generation's parents who obviously have lived much longer than their own parents did. And I mean, I went through that with my own mom as well. It's not an uncommon story. But you know, your column in a sense and your blog posts are addressing some issues that you've been dealing with personally that all come down to who you are as a man and who you are as a father. And gosh, there is no better way to get a message out but through a film. And that might be something you might want to think about down the road. I just think with your background, it might be something you want to put together.
Well, I don't really want to go back to that world for a whole host of reasons. But what,
okay,
I do think,
fair enough.
What I do think I could do that might broaden the message, so to speak, is write a book.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm contemplating, in addition to trying to support and broaden my readership through my column and blog.
Right.
But
well, books,
I don't
books
think,
often get made into films. So that,
well,
that's,
you know that movie, He's Not Into You, was based on a kind of a cute little self-help book that actually had some good truisms into it. So I've been thinking about writing a book about internet dating as a middle-aged man, and I think there are a lot of divorced men and women that could benefit from that.
Sure.
And not to mention a book that might be about a compilation of my columns or just a parenting book from the dad's point of view.
Yeah,
so
sure.
That's more what I'm thinking. I don't think I want to go back. I don't think I want to go back to that world anymore.
I got you. Well, listen, this concludes this installment, which is our Q&A of the Divorced Dad Weekly Expert interview series. And again, Bruce, both Danny and I want to thank you so much for all the time that you've given us for tonight's interview and for the Q&A. You've certainly opened our eyes, and I think our listeners have really appreciated. And of course, there'll be replays for all of this for anyone who wants to come back and listen again. We certainly encourage you to check out Bruce's website at brucesallon.com. There is a blue link on the replay page that takes you right to his website. And also check him out at momlogic.com and then look for the blog section. And Bruce is one of the lowly males on that site, one of three. And I think you'd really enjoy the blog posts because they're really tongue-in-cheek. I quite enjoy them myself.
So thanks again, Bruce, for being a guest for this installment of Divorced Dad Weekly.
Well, it was fun and thought-provoking, and I thank you for your time.
Well, folks, that concludes this installment of Divorced Dad Weekly's Q&A session for the Expert Interview Series. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you every success with your challenges. Stay strong and remain focused on your goals. Refuse to be baited by anyone, and remember,
the most important job you'll ever have
is to be a dad.
Thanks so much for listening.